This is Nevin from Panic, the makers of Playdate, a brand new handheld game and console, and you are listening to the Real Dudes Podcast.
Hey guys, two things real quick. One, head on over to iTunes and leave us a review if you can. It helps us out so much by doing that, and it helps people like you hear about Real Dudes Podcast. Secondly, Anchor, where we publish the podcast, now allows you to leave voice messages for us, which we can play on air. So we encourage you to leave us a question. You can leave a very short game review about a game that you're playing, or you can leave us a promo for the game that you're developing if you are a game developer, so you can get the word out about your game. Now on to this awesome, awesome interview. Welcome to Real Dudes Podcast. My name is Kyle, and I've got Carrington with me today. It's the duo, K&K in the morning, going on here. Carrington, what's up?
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, you know, just chilling. I know I haven't done this a whole lot, you know, just a couple times throughout the year, but Kyle?
Yeah, I know what's... Gosh, all right, go ahead.
I'm going to bring in a guest today.
You know, I figured.
Lively things up, you know, right before E3. Let's see what I can come up with this time.
Okay. All right.
Here we go.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. I think we have a special treat today, Kyle.
I see a guy. Well, I don't really see a guy. I see that he's in our chat.
We have here the great and wonderful Nevin Morgan. Sorry, I messed that name up a little bit. I know we practiced a little bit, but from Playdate. He is the developer. He's a developer at Playdate. Nevin, how are you today?
I am great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. And I know I kind of just transported you in unexpectedly, but thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it was a journey.
How did it feel?
How do I describe it? Have you ever tried picking up strawberry jam with your bare hands? It was kind of like that.
A little mushy and a little weird,
like being born. I mean,
that's a good way to describe that. I don't think anybody's ever described that on here. Nevin, thank you so much for coming on here. It is awesome that you're able to take your time out.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So, I know this is probably a busy week for you guys with E3 getting ready to start, and we'll get into discussing Playdate. But let's start out with you, like. How did you originally get introduced to games? Were you young? Was it family members? Like, what is your history in gaming? Where did it begin?
To sort of put my card down, I started with Commodore 64. I grew up in Europe, and that was my first system. And it was bought by my dad, who saw it at the store one day, and he was like, "Computers are the wave of the future. My kids need to have this." And my mom thought he was nuts because this cost like thousands of dollars at the time. But so that's what we had, and that's what I played on. And then you know you have the journey of your NES and so on. I've always wanted to make things. And so as soon as I realized that somebody makes games, I also wanted to make those. And so like sometime in the 2000s, I sort of tried doing that. And since then I've been, kind of doing it here and there.
Okay. So did your dad show interest in playing games, or was he kind of just more part of the software, building and programs and stuff like that?
My dad had nothing to do with any of this. He had literally heard on the news that computers were going to be big, which is why he bought this. He would play games with us. He was definitely less interested than an 8-year-old who just got a computer, but he was supportive, and he definitely recognized that it was like going to be important someday, so he supported that. And as soon as they couldn't get me a better computer, they did that. So I feel like my whole life, starting with that, they knew that I would end up working in computers, as they put it. It came true. The prophecy came true.
That's actually pretty cool. I feel like with a lot of parents, especially nowadays, it seems like they kind of kind of looked down on games and like software development and stuff like that. But to see
like the screen time concern.
Yeah. Kind of
like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have two kids, and somehow my kids don't have that like obsession with screens yet. They're 5 mm-hmm. and 8 years old. Someday they will, but so maybe I'm just fortunate. I'm not stressing it yet. Maybe someday I will. I just think it's like anything else. It's a thing we'll have to manage more than a thing where we'll like just draw a line in the sand and say no more computers. You know. Yeah.
You mean to tell me that they don't sit in front of the screen playing Fortnite whenever they're not doing chores or school?
This is going to sound, gosh, my kids don't play games. Hey. I'm sorry. Wow.
That's fine. You're fine. And it
is not through any decision of mine. I mean, I'm definitely trying to get them to play. They're just not that interested yet. And
yeah.
It's not the sort of thing where I can like grab them and go, no, you're going to play video games now. So, you know, it's like, I'm just like, okay, when you want to play them, we'll play them. So they're just interested in a million other things. There's so much stuff in the world right now. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing that they aren't. Because my daughter's two right now, and I don't, you know, she knows who Mario is, and like she knows who Pikachu is. But I want her to play games. Like, I want to share that with her. Yeah, but if she doesn't, then she doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to them about it. That's important. Some of that will land and get stuck, you know, and they'll remember it 20 years from now or whatever. But if they don't choose to spend their time playing the Nintendo Switch or whatever, that's fine, you know?
Yeah. Yep. All
right. But so with that being said, do they think what you do is like really cool and neat, like what dad does for a living? Or does it just kind of be like, you know, that he just does that thing?
They don't yet know. They think all adults have lame jobs, probably. Okay. So they don't get that. Yeah. It reminds me of when I was a kid, my parents cooked really well. And I just assumed that every adult cooked well. And the first time that I ate at a friend's house, and I was like, why is this food bad? Didn't your mom make this? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe not. So, you know, it's just like those realizations about the world of adults where, you know, you realize that some people have good jobs, so maybe, you know, not so good jobs or cool ones or ones they like or don't like, you know, it takes a while to learn all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I didn't mean to get sidetracked there. You had mentioned about 2000 is when you got into game development.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? I mean, did you create ideas and then started putting that on the PC and programming that stuff? Or how'd you really get your foot into the world of game development?
I mean, since I was a kid, I like drew them in a sketchbook or whatever, discussed ideas with my friends, but I had limited, you know, abilities and, you know, like means. So it never went very far. It's like, oh, I made a game in BASIC or, you know, Pascal or whatever, you know, Visual Basic on my computer. But then it was actually the smartphone, you know, revolution that made it so it became a little easier to actually not just to develop games, but to develop games that I could credibly like share with my friends. Because like, hey, a bunch of my friends have smartphones, so if I make a game, it's not that big a leap that they'd be able to, you know, get it from the whatever store and then play it. And so it was like in 2008 that my friend Matt Comey and I talked about, hey, let's make some iPhone games. And so I did that for the next few years. We shipped some games, one called The Incident, one called Space Age, one called Stagehand. So that was fun. It was mostly just that, there was a market and the technology was there such that you could make them and they wouldn't just like sit in a folder on your desktop for the next 10 years. You could actually put them out there.
Mm-hmm. Do you see, I guess from the way that you sound, not a lot of people, but when it comes to like mobile gaming and stuff, some people say like, it's not really gaming or anything. I mean, I personally see it as gaming. It's a way of taking your games with you to play, you had mentioned. And so you had developed also, I think recently, Black Bar and Gray Out.
Yes, yes.
So those are both games that are found on mobile platform.
Right.
Do you find that the development for games like those are you know, shorter to develop or longer, or just because of it being on a mobile platform? I mean, is it?
Yeah. It's shorter and it's simpler, and I don't like, I'm not offended at anyone saying like, oh, but it's, you know, so much less work than developing a game for a console or, you know, something you put on Steam. It is, but that's why it can happen. You know, I'm still just one dude who has a day job. My day job isn't making those games. And so I'm not going to develop the next, you know, Watch Dogs or whatever. That's just no, that doesn't happen. But if I can make these smaller games. And another thing is, like, those games that I mentioned, the first three, they're all, like, pixel art-y games. It's not so much the, you know, retro appeal of, like, oh, remember games used to be like this. It's just that it's faster. It's literally less graphics and you know, shorter animations. You can just get it done faster. And I think that often gets under-recognized, that it's just, like, it makes it possible for you to make games. And if that's, you know, one way to make it quicker and easier for more people to make them, then, you know, I'm all for it. And I also take a very, like, broad view of what games are. Obviously, there are games that are like, you know, Red Dead Redemption. It's an enormous effort that takes many people and many years, and you play it for a long time, and it's filled with content. And then there's stuff that's, you know, way smaller, but it's all games, and, you know, you don't have to play them all. You also don't watch every movie that ever comes out. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Cool. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just said cool.
Oh, okay. I completely agree with that. And it's amazing to see someone like you, and very relatable too, that, you know, you have your day job, and yet on the side, you're able to make games. Like, just that, I think for me, when it comes to indie games, like, that is one of the most appealing and outstanding things, that that you have the dedication to want to do what you love while you're still, you know, supporting your family at the same time. Like, that's awesome.
Right. Yeah. I think that's kind of magical about it. There's a lot of other things about developing games, you know, and like distributing them today that you get jilted about, like, you know, problems with this store and that one, or, you know, the gatekeepers and whatever. And, you know, those are all valid complaints. But, you know, 15 years ago, I couldn't have distributed games to more than like six people, period.
So you are also a part of Panic. About how long have you been working there?
Since 2007, so 12 years.
Quite a while. Did you have any kind of role in the development of Firewatch?
No, mostly because Firewatch was mainly developed by an incredibly smart and talented and hardworking team, Campo Santo. And the way I put it is, like, they don't need us to tell them how to make a video game. They're better at that than we are. We were there as basically like support, if that makes sense. You know, like, what can we do for you to help you make this game, you know, and how can we all bring it into the world? So, yeah.
So what, I guess, what is your role at Panic then?
I'm the designer. So we're a fairly small company, 26 people. And that's, you know, I mostly think of it as like a company of 10 people, because that's what it's been for the longest time. So I do design of anything that needs designing, from like branding to, you know, like our website, our actual products. You know, I do the, like, you know, UI design and all of that, down to, like, you know, I don't know, merchandise or, you know, stuff in our office or whatever.
Okay. That is, it's really cool.
It is. It's the best job in the world. I'm not leaving until they kick me out.
So what was it like being able to, even though you didn't have basically like a hand in Firewatch, but what was it like to see it kind of, that project grow and to become so beloved by many fans, not just in the US, but around the world even?
It was amazing, and like, I learned so much, even though I, you know, it's not like I sat there in meetings, you know, or whatever, but just seeing that process, you know, a little closer up, it was just amazing to, you know, they're really good at what they do, and they're really organized, and they know what they want, and they're going to work until they get it. So that was just amazing. Like, every time they showed us something new, I was like, oh my God, you're like four people in, you know, in an apartment. Like, how did you make all of this? So yeah, it was encouraging also, you know, also in the sense that, I mean, they made a game that is so like polished and beautiful and beloved. And, you know, that came from a tiny team, but also it was so story-driven and character-driven, which is something that, you know, I'm personally interested in. So it was very encouraging in that sense, like, yeah, you know, this can not only be done, but also it can do really well out there. There's a lot of people that this will resonate with. So it just sort of like made me double down on the idea of you know, wanting to work on games like that.
Very nice. And then on top of that, you guys are also, well, Panic is also publishing the Untitled Goose game. So have you gotten to see that game grow and gain some steam as well and some momentum as that gears up to being released?
Yes. I mean, the first time we showed it at an event, people went bananas. They were like lined up. I mean, we had to like add new PCs to our booth because we had like two of them. We were like, oh, that's enough PCs for people to play a goose on. No, more people than goose there. And I mean, they loved it. Like, it's so joyful. People just like, you know, they giggle, they laugh, they like, you know, show things to each other, like, look at that. And it's just like such a cool reaction to see also from such a broad spectrum of people. You know, tiny kids love this game, and, you know, every adult, you know, can find joy in it as well. So that's also been great. And it's like, it's what they described to us early on, House, the team that's developing Untitled Goose Game, you know, like, they sort of set the parameters for like what kind of game it's going to be. It's like a silly game where you play a goose who's kind of a jerk, and it's always been that, and everything is just working towards that goal. I love that sort of clarity. Like, it's such a silly goal. It sounds like a joke when somebody first tells you that, but they're like, nope, this is really what's happening, and we're going to make that, you know, be, you know, an enjoyable and full and immersive experience.
I can say, speaking from experience, you know, just seeing that trailer, you know, come up, I was like, I get to play a jerk and it's in the form of a goose. I'm sold. Take my money right now.
It's a bit like, you know, like, you know, Gato Roboto is another game, you know, recently, and like Downwell, where people are like, the pitch is right there. Like, it's you can describe it in one sentence and see one screenshot and you immediately know what's going on. And I love when that works, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm very excited to get my hands on it. And, you know, with that in mind, it was announced that Untitled Goose Game would be coming to the Switch. So was it hard as a publisher of that game, you know, working with Nintendo to try and get it on the Switch, or was it just easy as just signing some forms basically and announcing it?
Nintendo was so good about this, and I think partly it's because it fits their kind of their philosophy so much. Like, you could totally see this as a game that Nintendo independently, you know, made. They love silly stuff. They love animals. You know, the whole game is like, even though you play a jerk goose, it's such a wholesome, friendly, family friendly game for anyone. And Nintendo loves that. So, I mean, from day one, there was like no strong arming, no like, you know, difficult negotiations. They were just like, we really want this. And we were like, yeah, and we'd love to have it on the Switch. So it was just such a perfect marriage.
I completely agree. When I saw that announcement, I'm like, not only is this game perfect, I have no reason to not play it on my own Switch now.
Yeah.
So with that team, they're based in Australia, if I remember right. So is it hard trying to work with them being overseas and things like that? Or is it just, they just kind of do their own thing and they give you guys that stuff? Are meetings hard to set up, I guess, is what I'm getting at, to try and work with someone overseas?
Well, two things. One, like Campo Santo with Firewatch, House are such a hardworking, independent team and we have that confidence that we can say, hey, you do your thing, and when you have something to show us, show it to us. Mm-hmm. In terms of like meetings for just like day-to-day stuff, a lot of their team is actually distributed. They have people who have like lived in England or whatever, or in different cities in Australia. So they're used to that, you know, to that sort of asynchronous working. So it's just all been fine. I feel like we're also all learning it, like in the 2010s, to just like have you know Skype meetings with people and whatnot. So everybody's making it work. It hasn't really been difficult.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious, you know, how that kind of all worked out and stuff. So, but next, I really do want to get into, Nevin, why we're excited to talk to you. Panic recently announced that they were coming with something called the Playdate. Could you kind of talk about the Playdate, what it is to our audience, and why there seems to be so much buzz around it right now?
Playdate is a brand new handheld gaming system. It is a tiny console that is small and cute and thin and yellow. And you get to play all new games on it. The games are delivered in what we call a season of games. So when you buy this, you know, hardware, you get a pass to a season of 12 games, which will be delivered to the device one a week for 12 weeks. The games are all black and white, completely black and white, not like grayscale, but like, you know, ones and zeros, you know, on or off pixels, black and white, because that's what the screen on the device is. And the system also has a tiny crank. So it's like a crank control. You know, imagine like, you know, any sort of like rotational little, you know, control like on an old arcade game or whatever, but it's like built into this tiny little portable thing, and it's used for controlling things in games, you know. And you can think of a million little things, like, you know, I don't know, a fishing rod or a, you know, chicken rotisserie or whatever, anything where you have to like turn something, this thing does that. So that's our whole like little system that we have come up with and that we'll be selling pretty soon. It's kind of a wacky idea to introduce a new thing like this into a world that is A, like full of existing game systems, and B, is moving towards like really beefy, you know, high-end graphics, enormous resolutions, you know, kind of games. And so we just sort of like intentionally decided, well, what if we like take many steps back and try making something that's a little more like intentional and unique and cute rather than beefy, if that makes sense.
Can you confirm that the crank does not power the unit?
The crank does not power or charge the unit. That is, I understand why people think of that. You know, you think of like a radio that you can crank or whatever. In order to do that, in terms of physics, you need to have a lot of resistance in there. So the Playdate itself would have to like weigh as much as like a motorcycle, and it would have to be like the size of a guitar amp, and the crank would have to be like 2 feet, you know, long. Nobody wants that. If we put a generator into the Playdate as it is now, and it's like as thin as a smartphone, you know, and like the size of like, I don't know, two you know, decks of playing cards, if we put a generator in there, you would have to crank for like hours to get 2 minutes of, you know, juice out of it. So you don't actually want the crank to power it. Everybody's got USB, that's gonna work out better.
So you've been a part of the project from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah. What have you been working on with the Playdate? Like, what is your specific job with this incredible looking handheld?
Well, early on, you know, and everyone who was involved with it, there was just like this searching, you know, period of like, what is it? What are we making? And so everybody was contributing towards like, what does it do and how does it work? And, you know, how do you get the games? What are the games? And so, you know, I helped out with that, just like, you know, understanding this idea of like, you know, a season of games and building it around the concept of surprise. If I can share one story, this one thing that oddly inspired this was when streaming services, like video streaming services, started doing original shows, and some of them did that thing where they would unload the whole season of a show like in one day. Like, here's 12 episodes, you know, of like Arrested Development or whatever. And pretty soon we all realized that we kind of didn't like that at all, because like everybody went home and they like binged watched, you know, Arrested Development or something for 2 days, and we talked about it for a day, and they're just evaporated. Like, there's no like water cooler conversation every Tuesday or whatever about, you know, did you see the last episode, or I wonder what happens in the next one, the way you get with like Game of Thrones, you know, in the last season. And so we were like, yeah, that's kind of, it kind of sucks. Like, I prefer it when we can actually, when there's something to look forward to, and we're all in this together. We're all like waiting for the next episode together, and we can do a season finale party or something like that. The social aspect of that, we just hated to see that like completely go away from the world. So we were like, well, what if that's part of the surprise that we bring to this? Anyway, that's way back then. As the designer today, what I work on with Playdate is, you know, I probably contribute a little to the design of the actual hardware. And then the software is you know, probably a bigger concern of mine. Just like, what does the OS on this look like? Because this thing runs everything custom. This isn't like, you know, it's not an Arduino. It's not a Raspberry Pi. It's not running Android. It's running like it has our own like board and operating system and everything. So just sort of the design language and the user interface, you know, how does this work. And I've also worked on several games. Here at Panic, we're making a few, and then there's other developers who are working on games who might need help here and there. So I've been working on a bunch of them. I don't even know the number right now. So it's been that. And then also around like the branding of it and the marketing, like, you know, our website and yeah, just anything that needs designing.
Can you go into some of the games you guys are working on?
Right now, the one game that we're showing is called Kranken's Time Travel Adventure. It's by Keita Takahashi of Katamari Damacy and Nobi Nobi Boy and the upcoming Watam. He's an incredible artist, just a super interesting and cool person. So that's the game that we think shows off the system really, really, really well. Now there's at least 11 other games, since I said that we're promising a season of 12, and hopefully many more, you know, after that. But we'll talk about those later on, as you know, partly it's that, you know, I said that the whole thing is premised on surprise, so I have to hold those back a little because I want you to be surprised on that, right? You know, like week two, like what's it gonna be, you know, who is this game by and what kind of a game is it. You got to be surprised every week. That's just gonna make it a lot juicier, I think, for everyone.
Yeah. And how, I mean, how's that worked out for you guys, as far as you said you're making a few games there, and you also have other indie developers making games as well? I mean, did you just pitch the idea out to these developers, or were they the ones coming to you? I mean, how did that work out between you guys and then these other companies or individuals?
We've been working on Playdate sort of in earnest for 5 years, which it turns out is how long it takes to make hardware. And well, you know, at least if you're a small company that's never done this before and can't just like send millions of dollars to someone to go do it, we had to do everything ourselves. So in that time, once there was like a prototype that actually ran code, that's when we started approaching people and going like, hey, what do you think about this? And I mean, literally everyone we've shown it to has been so excited and has wanted to do a game for it. So it was early on, it was not difficult actually to find, you know, people to work with. I mean, obviously not everyone is available. A lot of people said, yeah, it looks amazing, but, you know, got the other things going. So nobody was approaching us because nobody knew about it. We had to keep it a secret until, 2 weeks ago. So now that we've announced it, you know, presumably somebody else will approach us, and then we'll see how it goes from there. It's mainly been just like us kind of at these like at game events. Like we'll go to PAX or GDC or E3 or whatever. And then like, you know, if we run into someone we know that we think might be interested, we're like, hey, you wouldn't mind stepping over here? We want to show you something. And a lot of them have been, super jazzed about it.
Awesome. And I guess kind of in your own words, like what does the Playdate bring to the table? I mean, that new and original compared to other handhelds now.
A lot of consoles are kind of unifying on what is, you know, a game, a typical game, in the sense that it's like, okay, you know you screen, and then you have either touch controls or you know D-pad type, you know, Xbox, a PS4 controller, and then those games can kind of shift between those systems pretty easily. It's pretty easy these days to, like, technically at least, to port a game from one to the other, even down to, you know, something like, you know, iPhones and iPads. Now it's pretty common for games to end up there, and we were hoping that if we do something so off the wall with like a e-ink-like black and white display and, you know, this crank controller, it's so unique that it forces new kinds of games and new ways of thinking about it. And maybe because we're small and maybe a little more, maybe we think about games a little differently, maybe it'll attract people who normally wouldn't go trying to sell a game to one of the, you know, bigger players. That's one of my big hopes, is that types of games that aren't always represented on like hardware consoles can come to Playdate. You know, I think there's an amazing world of indie games out there that usually end up being like web games or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be nice if those had a nice hardware home also. So, and you know, in my dreams, and you know, who knows what the reality will be like, but in my dreams, Playdate is a home for quirky, artsy games that are genuinely fun. They're not like not artsy like a kind of unbearable, you know, black and white French movie, but like, you know, they are fun, but in their own unique way, and that maybe don't have like the mass appeal of like this sold 100 million copies, because it doesn't have to. We're a tiny company. Maybe it can be for people, for a smaller group of people who really love these unusual games.
Hey everyone, just going to take a quick break here real quick and let you know about PDP Gaming. PDP is the number one video game accessory company in North America. Their passion is to design and develop products that help consumers engage and interact with the entertainment that they love, and they infuse their products with style and fun that allows people like you and I to stand out from the crowd. Lastly, their products are durable, and I, for one, can back that up. They were nice enough to send us out a few of their controllers, and I've got to say that they are gorgeous. They hold up extremely, extremely well, and they are awesome. So we will be sharing some of our reviews on the podcast, and we will also be sharing open boxes and to come out right, we'll be doing like open box videos on YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, you know, all the social media where you can find Real Dudes Podcast. You will be seeing our reactions to PDP Gaming accessories. So yeah, check them out. Go to www.pdp.com to learn more and to pick up your gaming accessories today. Back to the interview.
Hey, listen.
And I wanted to say really quick, because you guys kind of skipped over it, and I was just kind of like, I didn't want to say anything, but I just wanted to ask one quick question really quick. Because you said Takahashi is working on a game for you guys, and he's a creator of Katamari Damacy. So what's it like working with him on a game for your platform, on a series, a franchise that's, I mean, that's, I love that game. I love those games. So when I was reading, he was making a game for you guys for the Playdate, I got super excited. Yeah. And it was one of the reasons why I'm excited for the Playdate.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that. We also thought this perfect fit. And, you know, what I was saying just now about like quirky games, doesn't he seem to you like a unique personality in the world of games? Like his games are immediately recognizable as his own, you know? He has a unique, you know, aesthetic and sensibility and a sense of humor and a sense of like what is fun. And his games always combine like silly exploration with, you know, sort of like, you know, forward moving, you know, kind of goal, you know, seeking. But yeah, so we've known him forever, actually, going back to the Katamari days, because way back when Katamari first came out, you know, and everyone here loved it, we were, for whatever reason, bummed that there were no t-shirts of Katamari available in the US. And so we just basically called them up and said, hey, can we make them? And they were like, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. So that's what we did. So for years, Panic here in Portland, Oregon, was the place selling, you know, licensed Katamari t-shirts in the US. And so we've been, you know, in touch with him ever since then, you know, going back more than a decade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've stayed in touch. We've talked about, you know, a bunch of things since. Gosh, I remember it. So I started at Panic in 2007. And one of the things that was pitched to me then, and I'm very sorry that this never happened, but was he wanted to do an iPhone Katamari game. Like a brand new original one, not a port of, you know, any of the original games. And they pitched it to me. That was part of like my job interview. They were like, this is one of the things we might be working on. And I was like, yes. And so it never happened for, you know, not for reasons of, you know, creativity or whatever. It's always like licensing and rights and legal stuff and whatever. That's what ruins all fun in the world.
Mm-hmm. All the boring adult stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So like, it's just, it never happened. You know, whatever, but we've always stayed in touch with him, and I'm so happy that now 12 years later I can say like, yeah, actually the thing that they promised me in the job interview happened. I got to work on being with Keita Takahashi, so you know, it worked out.
That's fantastic, and I can't wait to get my hands on the Playdate just to play his new game.
It's super fun. I don't know if you've seen videos of it. There are some videos of, you know, actual gameplay out now. Mm-hmm. One of our employees in Japan, you know, demoed it. It's so fun.
Yeah, I did see, I remember seeing a small little clip. That's it, if I remember right. But I do want to keep some surprises for myself as well, because I try not to look at too many trailers just in general.
Right. Yeah, I'm the same way.
So you mentioned you have some demos set up, and you guys are at E3 this year?
I don't know about E3. Okay. I know that we are doing PAX, and we will, this might be like the premier announcement of this, but I think we will be at the XOXO Festival in Portland, if you're aware of that. Okay. So those might be the two, you know, physical events where people might be able to, you know, see a demo and get their hands on a playdate, you know, like check it out. Mm-hmm. That's the plan for now anyway. It's all kind of in the air, but that's our plan, PAX and XOXO. Awesome. It's been one thing that's been tricky is, you know, we made this announcement, but honestly, until like we hit publish, we actually didn't know what the world's reaction would be. Like, you know, we've had this mantra for years. Like, is it 5 people that care, or 50, or 5,000? We just didn't know. And it's been like, it's blown us away. It's a way bigger reaction than we expected. So we're quickly kind of like rethinking our plans and going like, oh, maybe we should be doing more stuff because there's so many people who want to know more. So we're kind of like rapidly working on, you know, maybe getting more information out there or getting some things done faster than we expected. So everything's kind of in flux right now.
All right, so how about this? You said that it's been in development for the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys had just announced 2 weeks ago. What is that feeling for you leading up to that you publishing this and like sharing it with the world? Like, this has been your guys' baby for the last 5 years. Like, what are you feeling at that time?
It was just, I mean, I was so excited for it to finally be coming out, because in those 5 years, I actually didn't even tell, like, my closest friends about it. Like, I told a few people because they had some sort of like, you know, technical, you know, interest in it, but I didn't tell, you know, so many of my close friends. And people would ask me in, you know, in the last 5 years, what have you been working on? Because my output of like my own side games has kind of slowed down as I've been working more on Playdate. Mm-hmm. And I've just been going like, yeah, we're working on something, but you'll see. And they probably thought in, you know, in their heads that I'm working on some, like, you know, I don't know, web editor app, you know, that, which is what, you know, Panic usually does. So I don't think they expected this. So it's, you know, once we started actually putting the finishing touches on, like, okay, here's our website and here's our, you know, media kit and, you know, here's, you know, the date and time when we're going to release it, it was, I mean, I was so glad that it was finally happening. Because like 2 weeks before that, I ran into a friend who knew about this project sort of, because I'd like briefed him on it a while ago, but he was like, oh, are you still working on that thing, or did you guys abandon it? And I'm like biting my tongue to go like, oh my God, we're going to announce in 2 weeks, you know, like he doesn't hear about it every day. So he thinks it's just maybe like a passing, you know, interest for us. So it was really good to finally get it out. Like, here it is. Yes, we've been working on it. And, you know, it's actually a real thing. And then the response has been just, you know, amazing to hear that so many people are excited. The thing that's so charming and you know, fills me with good feelings is seeing people make like fan art and mock-ups of their own games for it. It's just amazing, you know, because for me it's been like just this one tiny thing in our office, and to know that other people actually want to like make something for it, not just like, you know, have one, but also make things for it, that's just been incredible.
I personally think it's going to open up a world for games that we don't even know about.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Sweet. So you guys are doing like this in season. So do you guys have maybe some games set up for season 2? Like, you're talking with developers already since the announcement? Or are you guys trying to take it one thing at a time and haven't thought that far ahead yet?
Well, I guess there's two levels to it. One is like our dreams and fantasies. And that's, you know, in my dreams and fantasies, we keep doing this like as long as people will come along for the ride. Like, you know, we keep packaging these seasons maybe, or having other ways of distributing games. I don't even know yet. At the same time, we're a very kind of pragmatic company and like level-headed. So we're like, okay, look, we're going to promise people this one season, and we have all of those games like ready, you know, they're like in the hopper ready to go. So then we'll see how many people buy it. So, you know, we're just like cautious like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So now that we know that a lot of people are interested, like I said, we're kind of rapidly going, okay, we need to take this, you know, a little more seriously. Okay, fine. Let's start thinking about what happens after that. So yeah, it's all kind of like just gauging people's interest and then going, all right. We see that now we need to think not just about the next step, but maybe the next three steps.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's fair. Cause I just know about the season one and, you know, the whole season's concept. I was just curious about that. So
yeah, for anyone who asks, we're promising you that one season for sure. Like when you pay money, mm-hmm. you will get that definitely. And then beyond that, we would love to make more. I just want to make that clear. Like two things. We would love to have more seasons and more, you know, games that, you know, that come through us. And the second thing is we also want other people to develop games for it. You know, some people are asking like, oh, is this like totally closed or you think other people can develop? It's like, no, we want you to develop 100% and we will not like stand in your way there. And anything we can do to help, we will try. You know, we're a small company, so it's going to take us a while to like have our developer, you know, sort of like story figured it out, but we want to make it as cool and as convenient for anyone to make these games.
So can you go into maybe like some of the technical aspects of the games actually being downloaded to the mm-hmm. console? Like, is there going to be a store set up or does it just automatically connect to your Wi-Fi and then start downloading the next game on?
So the plan right now is that when you go to pre-order your Playdate, you create an account, like, you know, your Playdate account, and that is, you know, what you know, you authenticate on your device, and that is so that, you know, the device it knows your account, and then it'll ship with the one game, the first game on it, and then the next game, the next week, gets beamed to it over Wi-Fi. You know, if your device is just sitting there, you know, on your desk, it'll probably just pop into it. If you didn't get it for whatever reason, you'll be able to, you know, go and do that manually. And so that's how it should be. The device, by the way, has a little indicator light that's kind of hidden on it, and so that should start, you know, doing a little light show to tell you that, you know, a new game has just landed. That's the idea for the distribution mechanism right now. No, the games will not be preloaded on there, so you're not going to be able to like hack it on day one and show all 12 games. Those games are not; those bits will not be on your device until it's their time to come down from the server. That's our idea for the distribution. Beyond that, like some sort of a game store. Gosh, there's so much to figure out around that. The least interesting aspect of which is, once again, like the legal issues around that. So it's just like, it's going to take a while to figure all of that out. I mean, we've been doing it, but it's just like, we're not yet at the point where we can promise anything. So
that's totally fair. Can you speak with how easy it might be to design a game for it? If I'm an amateur programmer, mm-hmm. would I be able to go in and easily be able to make something for you guys, if I wanted to try to?
Great question. Here's what I can reveal today. So the simplest path to development on Playdate is using the Lua programming language. Lua is a scripting language not too dissimilar from, say, JavaScript, that a lot of games use just for like, you know, easy scripting, even if the game itself is written, you know, in Unity and something, you know, much beefier. So you would use Lua. In terms of designing games for it, another thing that I hope is that because it's got a small black and white screen, it's immediately a lower barrier to entry for a lot of people who are kind of maybe put off by like, oh gosh, like, you know, I have to learn 3D graphics and modeling, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's a small black and white screen. It's so few pixels and the art style is so simple that like you don't have to worry about it. People who are really good at this make graphics that look incredible on this. Like, people have always done that throughout history. You know, mm-hmm. they will take a very restricted, you know, platform and make things look incredible on it. But if you're just starting out and you're maybe overwhelmed by everything, you know, that's out there, I feel like this is simpler. The other thing is that while, you know, Playdate kind of looks retro, but it's not really retro because it's not really a throwback to any particular device in the past. It's sort of its own thing. So even though, you know, it's small and it's got this black and white screen, like, it's got way more memory than like a Game Boy or whatever. So you don't have to worry about that too much in your game. It's got tons of storage compared to, again, a Game Boy or whatever. Again, don't worry about storage. You know, you don't have to like sweat, you know, as you're programming that you're going to run out of disk space or whatever. So in that sense, it's maybe a little easier. In terms of our tools, it's one of those things where as we're working on it, the tools are mainly there to like make it possible for us to do it. But right now we are rapidly trying to make those as simple and understandable for anyone to use out there, because that's our goal, that, you know, when we, you know, ship some developer tools, it's really, really easy for, you know, amateurs to, you know, pick this up and make a game. Games can also be written, by the way, in C. So if you're a really, you know, like badass programmer and you want to milk all the performance you can out of this, then you can write in C. And we'll see. We might offer like, you know, a few tiers of development like that based on, you know, what you're comfortable with and what kind of game you're working with.
Okay, very cool. I mean, I haven't programmed anything since college, but I've been thinking like maybe I should brush up on it and learn, just brush up on some things to try and code something simple again. And that was just a question that I just started thinking about. So thank you very much. That would be great and exciting to maybe develop something in the future. I don't know. Like I said, it's just something that's been on my mind for the past couple of days, actually.
So, I'm sure we'll have something where you'll be able to essentially make a game.
Okay, that is all I ask for at the moment. At the moment.
Good. Deal.
With the games being released in seasons, if you end up going into a second season, I mean, do you have a feeling that you guys would potentially like wipe the first season?
Oh, or, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
So like, would you have limited time of playing a game until the next season or the next game came out?
Got it. So, but if I'm hearing it correctly, the scenario you're describing, fine. I bought the playdate in the first day, you know, I got it as soon as I could, and I got my 12 games, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it's been 12 weeks, I've gotten all 12 games. Those games are on your playdate forever. They're also like flagged in your account forever. If you lose your playdate, if you have to wipe it, if you get a new one, you get those 12 games forever. We are never taking those away. You've paid for those, and you know, as long as we can make the code run, we will. Let's say a season 2 comes out or some new way of delivering games. You know, get those. Those go on your device. Again, they're you know, forever yours. There's so much storage on the device also that you shouldn't have to manage those for a long while. You know, maybe when you're hitting like hundreds of games, we're going to have a thing where you offload them. But again, you can just reinstall them. So that's the idea. A lot of this is like, there's a difference between like what's technically possible and what we philosophically would like. So philosophically, we think you paid for the games, they're yours, and you can add as many games as you want. Technically speaking, you know, of course, you know, you run into the laws of physics here and there, but we'll try to make it as painless for you as possible, you know, to get what you paid for, basically.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, that answered my question perfectly.
Cool. We're not just to put it another way, we're never going to like take something away because like, oh, it was only for a little bit because it was a gimmick or, you know, like for some sort of like cutesy, you know, kind of feeling. The only reason we're doing this delayed, you know, season is just because, you know, it's kind of like 12 Christmases in a row where you're getting a new game. But beyond that, we're not interested in like, you know, kind of, you know, jerking you around with, you know, shifting your games around or anything like that.
Okay, that's perfectly fair because that is something I was wondering as well.
Yeah,
excited for because it's something new and exciting, but I also didn't want to lose things. Maybe I wanted to show it off, you know, a couple years down the road or something like that.
I certainly hope so.
I'm sorry, my kid's crying right now.
I could hear.
Let me ask you this question, or probably one or two more questions here. As a developer, you know, in working on this, what advice do you have for anyone that's wanting to get their foot in the door to develop or work on a project similar to what you're working on? Like, what advice do you have for those that are trying to get a start?
First, be lucky. Sorry. It's just like, I just want to acknowledge that, right? I've had a lot of lucky breaks in life. And, you know, I have to recognize that. You know, I started working at Panic because I randomly was introduced to them at a random event, you know, and then they remembered my face the next time we met. And, you know, no matter how much I like worked hard, that was something that happened, and I wouldn't have worked here without that. That said, what can you do to prepare for, you know, success? You have to really love what you do. And I'm sure everyone does, you know, like nobody hates what they do and then is asking how to, you know, be a success at it. I guess one thing I would say is 100 small wins are better than like chasing one huge one and then just never getting there. You know, it's like a friend of mine started writing a novel out of like right out of college. And then he said, like, he realized like 7 years in, like he had hundreds of pages of nonsense. And he was like, geez, maybe I shouldn't have started out by writing a novel. So I feel like for a person who's just starting out with games, of course, in your mind, you see a 3D open world multiplayer game with a, you know, complex story and whatnot. And you should hold on to that vision for sure, but you might want to try making like a simple platformer or like, you know, a Twine branching narrative or something. Just like, you know, take it baby steps. And the key to making that work is not to see those as like as failures or like chores or annoying little things you'd rather not be doing. Just like try always finding something you love, even about those small baby steps, even about the small baby step of like, I'm going to write my first Hello World program. Okay. All right. I'm going to go and, you know, mod another game. You know, I'm going to make a level for, you know, another game. Okay. There's that. I'm going to make a level for another game that transforms what that game is. I'm going to take like a, you know, first person shooter, but instead I'm going to make it a game where like you're late for school, you know, or something like that. You're finding new ways to be creative within what you can do at the time, because no matter what, when you start out, you're going to be kind of sucky at it technically. So you're going to have to instead excel creatively. And then, you know, you just build on those, you know, slowly. I hope that's helpful. I think on some level, maybe you'll note out already, but I just want to confirm that that's kind of how it works. You just like keep rolling the snowball and then, you know, it gets bigger. And then one day, you know, I'm, you know, here, you know, releasing a, you know, new console. I don't know how that happened. It's just all kind of added up. So.
I think I get what you're saying. You know, to make sure to don't go for a big bite, go for small little bites and challenging yourself along the way as well.
Yeah, yeah. And don't be bummed that you're not working on the big thing yet, because that was never going to happen, you know. So just like don't stress about that. Don't feel like you're a failure because you're not working at, you know, Epic, you know, for your first job. So
that is totally fair and totally level-headed and great advice for anyone that might be listening out there. So really quick, is there anything about Panic or Playdate that we didn't touch on that you would like to touch on that maybe you didn't get a chance to talk about just yet?
I think you've done a great job, you know, with your questions. I hope this makes the Playdate sound compelling to people, and I hope it all makes sense.
I can say, speaking for myself, I am on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm at 11 right now.
Awesome.
talking about the Playdate. So Niven, thank you for joining us. Before we send you off, where can we find out more about Panic, and where can we keep up to date on the Playdate?
Playdate's website is play.date. Our Twitter handle is just @Playdate. On our website, play.date, towards the bottom, you can sign up to be notified via email of anything new that's coming up. Do that. That's where you will first hear about when these are available for pre-order later this year. And you can also sign up if you're interested in developing games for a separate mailing list where we'll start letting you know about, you know, how that's going to work. So @Playdate on Twitter and play.date.
All right. Thank you very much, Niven. If that's it, then we will send you back and have a great day, man.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to get ready. I'm going to get him teleported out.